This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rob.
And we're Steve-less at the moment, but who knows, he might jump in and join us a little bit later.
Yeah, that'd be cool. If you're listening, Steve, which by this point is irrelevant, but if you're listening, please come join us.
Stop being lost. Yeah, because we do have something special
need him
to record.
Yeah, we need him for something, don't we? Yeah.
Maybe that'll be the After Dark Side this week.
Maybe, yeah. Depends on whether he makes it on or not.
Yeah. Right, it's a bit of a slow news week this week. There's only really one story worth talking about, and it's causing me some distress.
So yeah, it's all a bit bitty, isn't it? There's all these little odds and sods doing the rounds, but nothing concrete, nothing significant.
No, it's a little bit of a dry week. So fortunately, we've got tons and tons of listener bits and pieces to get through. So with that being said, well, let's have a quick catch up. What have you been up to, Rob?
Well, I mean, this week I was catching up with editing my other podcast projects. I managed to get one of them done, which goes, as at the time of recording, goes out tomorrow. But by the time this goes out, it will have already been up for the weekend. That'll be teased in the outro.
Yeah, but
it's nice. It's a nice feeling to get back on that horse. I've not been able to do it for a while just because of scheduling issues and moving house and stuff.
Yeah, you've been a busy boy recently, haven't you?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe, mate. Seriously.
Yeah, I have a bit of an editing week this week as well. I've ended up doing at least three versions of the same podcast.
Yeah.
For reasons that will become very evident to our listeners in not too distant a future.
Yes, that's and obviously it will bring in, hopefully, some new listeners from other avenues. So that's always nice.
Fingers crossed.
All being well, yeah.
Quickly on that note, without revealing too much about what's coming up, I started something this week. I know that you saw it, Rob, a VIP program.
Yes.
So there is now something called TSW VIP, and it's very easy for people to become VIPs. They just have to be Star Wars, Talk Star Wars sponsors.
Okay.
So as soon as you become a Talk Star Wars sponsor, you automatically qualify to be a VIP, and you'll be sent the opportunity to subscribe to an exclusive blog feed that no one else gets. So as a VIP, and you are a VIP, Rob.
I am indeed.
You will get the news about what's happening on Talk Star Wars earlier than anybody else.
Yep.
You get some exclusive download content, which I won't give away here because it's for the VIPs. And also exclusive content from events such as Star Wars Celebration.
Very nice.
Because Steve and I will be on the ground for the 3 days at Star Wars Celebration, and the VIP feed will be the easiest thing for me to be putting things in during the day.
Oh, perfect. Okay, well, that works out well. So you do it live at the weekend, over the weekend, and then obviously afterwards you just kind of round it up on the main site?
Well, I'm hoping to do plenty of stuff. I think what I'll end up doing is some periscopes. The Instagram feed will be filling up as I'm throwing out images, and that will cascade down into our Tumblr and Facebook and things like that, and Twitter.
Well, we are a huge deal.
it's a complicated web, our little network.
Yes, indeed.
So all of those areas will be filling up, and then but the VIP feed will get stuff on the go because it's very easy for me to add into. But the main feed, I will make every effort to get some content put together at the end of every day.
Yeah, fair
or
enough.
Maybe while I'm queuing even.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be a bit of a roundup with some nice photographs and some video, hopefully. And I'm going to try very hard to do sort of podcasting from the event every day. I'm going to take some kit with me to do little podcasts every day.
Awesome.
So there'll be plenty of stuff going on there. But if you are listening and you want to become a VIP, then head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support. There you'll find the option to become a sponsor, which you can become for as little as £1 per month, which is taken securely via PayPal, and you will then be sent to register as a VIP, and you'll start to get this exclusive feed.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm really pleased with it. I even signed myself up as a VIP, so I get to surprise myself with some exclusive content.
Well, from speaking from somebody who is on the VIP list and has obviously started getting those emails, I can say from experience that they're very unintrusive and very light. They're not, you know, you're not getting spammed every left, right, and center. It's very much kind of as there's something. It's not just messages for the sake of messages.
No, it's not. It's going to be stuff. I like to think of it as a private way of updating the people that really invest in us and what we do.
Yeah.
Not just invest financially, you know, but the people that are really interested, they get to get an insight. Like, we've got some big news coming up in the next couple of weeks, I would think,
mm-hmm.
that people are going to be interested in, and the VIPs will get that news first.
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit of a thank you, just mm-hmm. so that they're kept up to speed with what we're playing around with. So some interesting things coming up. But yesterday's VIP, I could say it now because it's gone out, was that Facebook Messenger code. Did you see that last night, Rob?
I did, and actually I'm going to have to pick your brains as to how to get that because I'm intrigued and I want one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
In terms of I want one for my own ventures.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll walk you through it later, but it's very cool. I've made it into the profile picture on a couple of things. And so
yes, I saw that.
If you do come across it, it's very sci-fi looking, little blue, looks like a circular QR code, isn't it?
Yeah, like you just it's the kind of thing, it strikes me, it looks like a key from like a Tomb Raider style movie. If it was made of, you know, rock or something like that, it would slot into something, and it's got that kind of feel to it, I'm guessing is the point of it.
I think so, yeah. And then all people do is they hold the Facebook Messenger app up to mm-hmm. that image.
Yes.
Add plus on your contacts, it will give you the option to scan.
Superb.
Scan the code, it adds us in, and then you've got a direct line to us.
Cool.
Really cool little piece of kit. So
yes, sounds good.
While we're on the subject of Facebook, let's jump on into our announcement section because we picked up a few Facebook followers this week.
Okay.
So just wanted to give a big fat welcome to David Eugene Silas and Dwayne Thomas for joining us on Facebook. Welcome to Talk Star Wars, gentlemen.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to entertaining you.
Thanks for the support. I'm sure Steve would extend his gratitude if he could be bothered to come back from Paris.
Oh, right.
It's just
the jet-setting lifestyle that has afforded us now that we're gaining international recognition.
It doesn't feel like I'm a jet-setter. It feels like I'm doing two jobs.
I'm right there with you, mate.
Yeah, let's leap into some reviews and try and keep this positive.
Awesome.
Kyle over at Tumbling Saber left us a review. He left it on May the 4th. But you know, I said last week I was going to look into the international stores.
Yes.
I actually got around to doing that. And I checked on the Canada site. And yeah, there was a little review Kyle at Tumbling Saber. It's a really nice review as well. He said, nothing phony about this show, just honest opinions and tons of humour. A gem amongst the myriad Star Wars podcasts out there.
There are a myriad. I've seen this. There's a fantastic selection. If you're a Star Wars fan, there's never been a better time to be a podcast listener. So much stuff.
Yeah, you have to be very selective about some of these things you pick up. I think there's a lot of people, like we sort of invest more in listener communication and wild theories. No, there's less about, you know, there's a bit of news, but we've got other things that we pay special attention to.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a thing out there for everybody's taste, I'm sure, right now.
I think so. I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah, and while we're on the subject of Tumbling Saber, I highly recommend. I was listening to their podcast on the way to work a couple of days ago.
I've heard the latest one. It's really good.
Yeah, got right to the end, and then Carl, bless his heart, gave us a big shout-out at the end and recommended us to their listeners. So I wanted to return the favour. If you haven't listened to Tumbling Saber yet, I know many of you do, because I can see I'm looking at my Twitter feed now and I see people talking to each other. If you haven't checked it out, check out Tumbling Saber and Saber in iTunes. They're absolutely fantastic. Really cool guys as well.
Yeah, I really like them a lot. Got a lot of time for them.
Okay, listener comms. We've got some communication from some familiar names there. Did you want to kick us off with that first one, Rob?
Absolutely, yeah. So, hang on. Why has it done that? All right. Daniel Palmer at dpalmer11 on Twitter. So I think we've definitely dealt with Daniel before.
Daniel's our friend from Costa Rica and
Costa
a VIP.
Rica. Yes, thank you. He's and a VIP as well, even better.
He is indeed, yeah.
What a lovely man. He sent us a fantastic tweet linking to the art that tells the story of Star Wars Episode 4 A New Hope in a single image, which is
Have you seen it?
I'm just having another look now. Oh man, this is.
Yeah, it's insane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a few people sent this link to us. Yeah. And I'm really grateful for that because I would have missed this, I think, because I've been so distracted this week. But a number of people, including my friend Paul, sent us this link, and it is pretty cool, isn't it? Really interesting.
Yeah,
it's about
absolutely.
400
really, really
feet
is.
Long, that thing.
400 feet? Well, if you were to print it.
Yeah, if you were to print it. Crikey. It's insane.
No way would I even attempt that.
No, it's really cool. Thank you for that, Daniel.
Yeah, that's thanks really for that, awesome. Daniel. And a massive shout out to Martin Pancho, who's the artist credited, is a graphic novelist. It's nothing short of incredible the amount of work that must have gone into that.
Put the hours into it,
really,
didn't he?
Really, really impressive.
He's got somewhere with it, though. I mean, it was pulled up on, I think it was on a Star Wars show this week.
I can believe it. That's the kind of thing. There's, you know, the best kind of fan communities are the ones that recognize not just the quality of something, but the sheer volume of effort involved. And that is definitely something that's taken a long old time. I mean, even if you're using digital software and things and copy pasting things, it's still an enormous endeavor.
To get it right, to get it that spot on as well.
Yeah.
And it's a balancing act because you know how unforgiving some of the fans can be. You make one little error.
Totally.
And they'll come down on you like a ton of bricks. But yeah, good work, that man.
Yeah, absolutely. That's nothing short of incredible.
Right. I'm really gutted that Steve's not around for this next comment because this cracked me up the other day. So, this is from Facebook. Stacey White left a comment on a Facebook post, which included, it was the Facebook post for TSW After Dark Side, episode 9, I believe.
Yes.
And Stacey's put, this episode was so great. Great comic timing on the jokes. And I learned a new side of Stephen. I love my newts. She's quoting. Best line in the podcast week. May the force be with you.
Oh, thank you, Stacey. That's very, I'm sure Steve will be very pleased to read that.
Oh, he's going
to
be touched. That really made my day. And what I thought was really funny was I learned a new side of Stephen.
Yeah.
Because he's becoming notorious.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like they know each other. I thought
we're all going to have our gimmicks really by the end of it. We'll all have our, not gimmicks, but we'll all have our things. You know,
foibles,
there'll be something, there'll be something about us. He's the, you know, Rob, he's the one who doesn't shut up about video games, things like that.
Yeah, I think you and I are pretty down to earth, but
I'd like to think so.
Poor old Stephen is the most idiosyncratic one of us.
And he is, as an environment, you know, a heavy environmentalist, he is the most down to earth of all of us, if you think.
He's really passionate. Yeah, there's a little bit of a secret for Stacey. The only way we can get Steve to hang around for the After Dark Side sometimes is to get him talking about his wildlife.
Yeah, seriously.
Because he would often say, no, I've got to go. And then you start him off and suddenly you've got half hour's worth of content because he won't stop.
Last week we did something similar. Unfortunately, it didn't get recorded. But he said, oh, no, I've got to go. And we got him talking about something. And I can't remember for the life of me what it was. But he ended up sticking around. It was video games. Yeah, he ended up sticking around for half an hour. And we realised afterwards, that would have made a good After Dark Side. That's a shame.
Yeah, we got to it because I was working on I started the edit while we were talking.
Yes.
And I got about 25 minutes in and I thought, I've not been recording this. And he's still there.
Yeah, he's still there. Still
and
going.
He was on point as well when he was dead funny.
Yes.
This goes to show he's funny whether or not he's being recorded. And it's just,
absolutely. Yeah. The best podcast hosts I find, and this is from experience of working with several, is the best ones are the ones who are funny whether the microphone's on or off, because a lot of the time they're the ones who would be doing that same stuff anyway. They just wouldn't be recording it if it wasn't for podcasting.
Case in point last week, wasn't it? Yeah,
exactly.
I'll learn my lesson.
Yeah, well,
always
next time,
record.
Just always have the recording on. This is it. Or
that's it.
I can do my bit.
Yeah. Okay, right. But this next one, Rob, you can take if you like. This is the holdover from last week because we ran out of time last week.
We did. We had a big old fun packed show, and I mean, it may still end up that way this time too, but we'll see.
Yeah, might do.
Right. So Jonathan Morales responded to your Snoke theory, Mark. So this is the one you wrote on the site, right?
That's right. Yes.
Your Star Wars insight, which is a cracking read, by the way, and everybody should definitely check it out. The one with the really incredible artwork of Snoke.
Yes, by Ben Sinclair. Yeah.
Ben Sinclair. That's the one. Right, so it reads, "Hey Mark, thanks for the shout-out on the show. Great podcast, well worth the wait concerning Snoke. Very interesting indeed. Although I wonder, why would JJ and the rest go through all the trouble of creating a new character in Snoke when the same attributes could be given to Plagueis? Why skip over Plagueis and have Snoke turn out to be Plagueis' master? To me, this seems unnecessary, as most of the characteristics you describe can be attributed to Plagueis, although his story is no longer canon. Just seems like creating a new character for the sake of it, not being Plagueis, seems unlikely. Although, as I've said, I'm partial to Snoke as Plagueis, just seems to tie things up more nicely. Anyhow, enjoy the listen and read. Keep up the good work. Okay, so let's break this down. Why would Snoke be a new character and not Plagueis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I got this response from Jonathan, because Jonathan and I had been messaging backwards and forwards as I was sort of putting this theory together, yeah. And he was very keen to hear what I had come up with, and of course it was growing as it was going.
Yes, as is always the case with these things.
Always the case. The more research you do, the more informed these things become.
Yes.
And so I had an answer ready when he fired this to me, and basically my response was that I think the creators of these new Star Wars movies are going to want to try and move away from the Sith. They're going to try and move away from the archetypes that George created in the original films.
Okay.
Just to flesh out the universe a little bit. And, you know, we've heard Maz use that line in The Force Awakens where she said, I've seen evil's taken on many forms. You remember, yes. She said about the Sith and the First Order and all this sort of stuff. And now I'm thinking perhaps we're going to get a version of villainy,
yep,
in these new Star Wars films that aren't the Sith. And they're not, okay, limited by the restrictions of the Sith.
All right.
And that's what I think the Knights of Ren might be about.
Okay.
It's still growing. And the more I think about it, the more keen I am on the idea. But that's what I suspect this is. I think Snoke represents a time before the Sith resurgence. We mentioned that, I think, last week very briefly. And I think what he's bringing back into the fold with Kylo is something that isn't constrained by things like the Rule of Two.
Okay.
And so that they can ultimately be a little bit more dangerous.
Fair enough. Cool. Okay. Well, hopefully that's a good answer for Jonathan. Although I think he's already warm to your theory by the looks of it from his message.
Yeah. And also, actually, Evidentialist has left me a nice... an uncharacteristically brief comment on YouTube as well about how they had let go of the Snoke is Plagueis thing.
Yes.
Not it was mainly from the Pablo announcement.
Yeah, he did seem to be very keen to shoot that one down.
Yeah, he needed to. And that's why, that's really the spine of that Snoke theory that we've got on the site at the moment.
Yes.
Pablo's statement. So.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so there's a second part to his inquiries. So he sent you a link to a subreddit, right?
That's right.
Fan theories. Yeah, so fan theories is a subreddit that I don't think it's specific rather to Star Wars. I think it's generic fan theories about anything that's not been revealed yet about any movies. Although I imagine at the moment it's probably pretty Star Wars heavy.
Yeah.
So that link was a theory on Rey as the sister of Poe Dameron.
Yes.
And it was tying into the trees of the pictures of the Force tree leaked from Episode 8. And he was curious about your thoughts on that. So help me out, because I haven't seen this picture.
Yeah, this was covered on Tumbling Saber this week.
Yes.
Where they sort of shot the theory down. And I know Kyle... It kind of ruffles Kyle's feathers a little bit, these sort of things, don't they? When these,
yes,
forgive the phrase, but these half-assed theories that come flying out where people haven't done their research. And
yeah.
And I'm glad I listened to Tumbling Saber, because it's altered my opinion on this thing. I never thought for a second that there could be any connection between Poe and Rey, but
occurred to me.
No, just purely because of heritage-wise, if you look at Oscar Isaac, he's from Guatemala, and that's very much, I think that's where he's sort of saying that Yavin 4 is where his character is from, where Poe is from. So that's kind of like, that's what their look is. And Daisy Ridley, English Rose, whiter than white.
Yes.
Those two things don't connect. But that's a very base and very narrow-minded point of view, as the very insightful Kyle pointed out on Tumbling Saber.
Mm-hmm.
Pose spoilers for
Shattered Empire, right?
Shattered Empire, sorry, yeah. Is it Shattered Empire or Lost Stars?
The comic series, right?
Oh, no, this is...
the Claudia Gray book?
This is a Claudia Gray book.
Sorry, yeah, Lost Stars.
Which deals with Poe's parents, I believe.
Yes.
And Kyle pointed out that Ray's too young to have been born to Poe's mum because of Poe's mum's fate within that book. So
I do remember hearing this on Tumbling Saber, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah. So that kind of shoots this whole Ray being Poe's sister theory down.
Yeah.
And like Kyle pointed out, it wouldn't take a great deal of research to sort of get to the heart of that.
Yeah.
And not that I'm suggesting Jonathan should have done the legwork. He shouldn't. This thread's very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's worth kicking it around. And, you know, fortunately, we're connected to Tumbling Saber and we get those nice little thoughtful, informed insights from them. So we don't have to do the legwork.
Yes. Yes. And if I ever wanted to know about hockey, they're a great place to find that sort of thing out as well.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
But hockey and Canadian bands.
Yes. Canadian bands. That was one of their themes as well last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So did you want me to read the questions? The next one?
Yeah. This is from Kyle, right?
Yes. This is Kyle at Tumbling Saber. To give you a bit of background on this for the listeners, I emailed a question to Tumbling Saber and me and Kyle got chatting back and forth about Rebels to start off with.
Oh,
and that's where the second part, there's two questions from him. And the second one is the first one he asked me, but he also asked me this question. So his question was, just how quickly did Finn scrap his First Order programming? Upon first meeting Han, Finn asks if he was the Rebellion general. No problem there. That's a fact no matter what faction is doing the teaching. The sticking point is in the following line. Wasn't he a war hero? To which Chewie simply shrugs. Why in all of the galaxy would Finn ever refer to Han as a war hero? If Finn was scooped up from birth and brainwashed about galactic history, then Han would have only been painted one way. Rebellion general, illicit smuggler, and terrorist. There's no way the First Order would have ever used war hero to describe Han, right? So why does Finn refer to him as such? Has Finn already unlearned everything he's learned from the moment he decides to defect? And has he already recontextualized everything that's been so deeply ingrained? That's an interesting question, because that bugged me as
well.
It
really is.
Yeah, because that bugged me at the time, and I raised it in when we did the Crazy Train Force Awakens podcast. I raised that question because it was, to me, it seemed far too quick that he was going from, you know, soldier on a mission, so, like just kind of a face in the crowd, to blowing apart his old colleagues with no real hesitation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It all seemed a bit too fast. But I'm glad it's not just me.
Yeah, but I think, you know, my explanation for it will be giving the film a way out, I think, rather than it being any sort of concrete narrative explanation for it. I would say that first and foremost, the quality that informs Finn's decision, like his personal qualities that inform his decision to leave the First Order, might have something to do with the way he views Han and the Rebellion, and might have a lot to do with why he can sever those ties so readily to the First Order, because he's not as deeply programmed, in inverted commas, as Kyle was put in his question. That might be a bit of an out, but it also, this question supposes that every member of the First Order is brainwashed.
Yeah, true.
And it might not be that clean cut. With the clones...
Yeah, I suppose so. I never really thought that.
We know that the clones were engineered to be loyal to Palpatine and to be ferocious in battle and all those sorts of things. And they were almost two-dimensional.
Yes. With a few exceptions, but for the most part they were.
Yeah, when they were exceptional, like Rex.
Yeah.
So for now, I'm sort of suggesting that Finn is certainly a special case.
Yeah.
Because he's not in as deep as everybody else, because he's, whatever that quality is that's motivated his desertion of the First Order. But then I also don't think that it's right for us to assume that they are all just brainwashed.
Okay.
It could be that they're under some kind of spell.
Yeah.
If you like, propaganda. This might be the only way that they can have a quality of life, even though it's a life of servitude to the First Order.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, most of the Star Wars universe seems to be backwater. I mean, even Han Solo, former general and hero of the rebellion,
is
back to smuggling dangerous animals and living on a borrowed dime.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like the world is particularly flush, does it? So maybe...
No.
You know, and like we've said before, Phasma seems to be pretty much a coward who takes her strength from belonging to the First Order. And the second they say to her, lower the shield, she's like, all right, because she's not really committed.
Yeah.
She draws her strength from belonging. And perhaps that's the sort of... That's the way the First Order is bonded. Mm-hmm. They draw their strength from being together in the First Order, but none of them are really committed to any cause.
Yeah. But, I mean, there is something to be said for the fan-out kind of mechanisms of Star Wars. I was reading one the other day, because something occurred to me as I was thinking about Hosni and Prime.
Yeah.
And what occurred to me was, how did they see the destruction of Hosni and Prime from... Takodana, yes. How did they see it from there when the speed of light is presumably similar to ours in the Star Wars universe? And I looked it up because I thought, oh, has anybody ever thought of this? And the answer was, apparently, because when the Starkiller base fires, the light travels faster than the speed of light, so it's actually a hyperspace weapon.
Yeah.
Which is how they're able to travel that distance in such a short time. So actually, the act of ripping a hole through hyperspace causes it to display. But then, that I don't know if that should affect the destruction of the planets themselves or just the arc of the beam. You know what I mean? It doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm not a contrary to popular belief, I'm not an established physicist. So I don't know whether that would be the case. I mean, obviously, I suppose if the energy that's been ripped through hyperspace is kind of coursing through the planet's core, then maybe that's what causes it to flare up. But it just seemed odd to me, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, where I think the practical explanation for it is that the writers didn't put any thought into it or afford it any... import when they were telling the story. And then historically it's like the Parsecs thing in A New Hope. We have to come along afterwards as fandom and build explanations that get the writers out of the corner they've painted themselves into. So in time, and I mean, this is Leyland Chi and Kiri Hart and Pablo Hidalgo now on the story group. They're the gnomes working away in the little workshop giving solutions to all of these problems. So in time, we'll have proper solid solutions around all of these questions, I'm sure.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was actually Pablo who actually replied to that question and answered for the person. Yeah, so he's definitely taking a hands-on role with that job.
Yeah, they've got a room full of science elves in Lucasfilm.
That's it, yeah. They've got a room full of science elves, but at the same time, wizards in space. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's a certain, it's like Doctor Who, you can apparently allow for a certain amount of stuff not making sense if you talk about time travel, that sort of thing. It's the same kind of mentality. If you're
wibbly wobbly time.
Yeah, timey wimey is their word of choice, as I recall. Anyway, on a lighter note, in terms of the questions, this is Carl's own words, because I think he realised it was a bit of a
grim question. Deep one.
Yeah. Rank these in order of your preference for Rebels Series 3 possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got the return of Obi-Wan Kenobi, the death of Darth Maul, the return of Ahsoka Tano, and the intro of Thrawn.
Yeah.
So do you want to start and rank yours from... Do you want to start with your least... The one you'd be least bothered about. Okay.
I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to say I'm going to choose two.
Okay.
But I'm going to include all four options. So I don't know Thrawn because I haven't read that book the way yourself and Steven, so I'm not familiar with that character. So I'm going to rank that as my second. I think it's I think it's probably quite likely that that's going to that's going to be the thing.
Yeah, it seems to be.
But that would be my second of two. But the one thing that I'm really keen on is seeing all three of those things in one story.
So Ahsoka and Obi-Wan both returning to kill Darth Maul.
Now, a while ago, I gave my idea for an Obi-Wan story, which was the return of Maul going to Tatooine to take out Obi-Wan and accidentally discovering Luke.
Right.
And I also thought Ahsoka would be interested in getting to Obi-Wan to get his help.
Yep, fair enough.
Once she learns that Anakin is now Darth Vader.
Yeah.
So that I wonder if that might be something that they'll entertain in season three of Rebels.
Yeah. It'd make a lot of sense.
Ahsoka come back, go to get Obi-Wan because now she knows Anakin is Vader and she might go to get him because by the time New Hope rolls around, Obi-Wan is fully aware that Anakin has returned as Vader. And as far as we know, he left him to burn on the banks in Mustafar.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily know, because it's not like they have intergalactic CNN, is it? And they suddenly say, Darth Vader was Anakin Skywalker and is now this big evil... He shouldn't know. Obi-Wan shouldn't really know unless someone goes to Tatooine and tells him.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that Ahsoka will go there and say, I need your help. Anakin is fallen under this spell. He's now this big evil dark monster. Mm-hmm. And then Maul follows her to Tatooine, and then the two of them will have to take him out when he mistakenly identifies Luke and realizes who he is and realizes what his value is. That's always how I wanted to see Maul go out.
Yeah.
That was in Warren Fu's graphic novel, and it was fantastic, so I really want to see that.
Well, they did a something similar in the Legends with Asharad Het, who was Darth Krayt in the series Legacy, which is the one that set sort of 100 years after Jedi. They had him kind of tell his backstory, and he was raised by among the Tusken Raiders, and so he went back after Order 66. He went back to Tatooine and started leading a war band of Tusken Raiders, and ran into Obi-Wan Kenobi, who told him basically cut it out. They had a fight. They had a fight, and he dishonored Asharad Het by unmasking him in front of the Tusken Raiders.
Oh, right.
And so he had to go off, and he was sort of banished from his tribe and everything. And it cuts back to him after that story, and he says, now I realize why Obi-Wan Kenobi was there. He was protecting the child of Anakin Skywalker. So they've done stuff like that in the Legends before, and we've talked about in the past, they've done little nods to the Legends stuff in the proper canon again.
Yeah.
They brought back, obviously, certain characters and stuff.
Yeah, it's like Dave Filoni said in his tweet this week, wasn't it? There's always truth in legends.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
So they're definitely going back and dipping in and taking what they want out of it, repurposing it. It'd be interesting to see where they go with that.
Yeah. It would be very interesting indeed.
What would your preference be for these four options then, mate?
So here's the dilemma I face. I'm all for Ahsoka Tano returning. That's probably one of my favourite options. I'd say Obi-Wan returning, because who doesn't love Obi-Wan Kenobi, I think? Yeah. Apart from Anakin, maybe. Which is fair enough, you know.
He actually hates him.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's a direct quote.
Yes, there you go. He was quoted as saying, I hate you. In between coughing up ash. The death of Maul, I mean, it has to happen, doesn't it?
Yes,
I mean, that kind of has to happen at that point. There's no way he can make it to episode four.
No.
So he has to die, or be in some way, something else has to happen to him that means he's not a dark side user, not a force user, because then that whole there is another becomes like, oh, and there's Maul as well, if we can convince him to join up. So let's say Obi-Wan top, Ahsoka second, Maul third, and actually I'm going to put Thrawn fourth. Now, the reason is because although I'm a massive fan of Thrawn, it's kind of because of that that I put it last, because I'm already worried that they're going to have to do massive amounts of chopping of his backstory in order to make him fit in the Rebels timeline. And to do that changes fundamentally a lot of the core kind of understanding. Like, for example, I mean, this is one big thing about it. The Empire was full of xenophobes. They were, you know, convinced that the kind of humanoid people were the only ones who were worth anything, and aliens were only good for subjugation, slavery, that sort of thing. And there's loads of legend stuff, and obviously there's loads of other stuff. I mean, even things like the Tarkin book is kind of dealing with how they're exploiting planets for labor and minerals and that sort of thing. And in order to make Thrawn fit in Rebels, you kind of have to eliminate all of that xenophobia, unless they go down a very different route with his character. And they don't actually have him as a Grand Admiral within the storyline. They establish him as a character, but he's not necessarily in the form that we have come to know him in. So he's not necessarily in that kind of regal Grand Admiral's position, in that, you know, really cushy job with his own ship and that sort of thing. Maybe he's a prisoner that gets captured, and the Emperor secretly squirrels him off to be his sort of, you know, one of his trusted advisors and that sort of thing. So maybe that sort of thing, that sort of storyline might fly. But if it's just a case of, oh, he's in there now and he's a Grand Admiral, it won't quite fit. And that's my worry. So for me, that's the one I'd like at least like to see, unless they can do something with it that's compelling and still makes some sense within the kind of wider canon.
Yeah. I wonder if they could give him a couple of episodes until a backstory.
Yeah, maybe.
So that they spend some time away from the Rebels and develop them a little bit.
Well, I mean, the original backstory for him is fantastic anyway, because, I mean, it's from a Legends canon book again. It's called Outbound Flight, and it deals with the bulk of the Jedi who were left between episode 2 and 3. There's a project to send off some of the Jedi into unknown regions, kind of explore for new civilizations and make contact and be ambassadors of peace throughout the galaxy. And the Emperor sends them into a trap, knowing that there are hostile alien species in the unknown regions. And I think, if I remember rightly, it's been a while since I've read it, but I seem to recall that Thrawn is the leader of one of the warbands. He certainly established that way. He's kind of introduced to the Empire through, or the Republic at that point, but eventually the Empire, through that act of outsmarting the Jedi tactically and defeating them and destroying them. But he gets excommunicated from the Chiss, which is his race, and then he gets introduced to Palpatine through that and gets his own command, but he has to go back into the unknown regions and explore it in the same way, obviously with the Jedi having been bumped off. Palpatine can give him a bit more scope. I'd like to see, that's another, you know, they will lose out on all that kind of really cool backstory if they go down just the route of, oh, he's there.
He did say that he was, that he thinks he's found a way to make a Legends character work. That was one of his things. So if this is as complex an origin story as you're saying, then maybe Dave Filoni's cracked it.
I mean, if anybody can, he can, right? He knows his stuff. I'm not trying to take away from him by any means, but that's my wariness is, I don't know how they can do it.
What do you make of Dave Filoni's desire to have Ewan McGregor come back and replace James Arnold Taylor as the voice of Obi-Wan?
I think it's a nice idea. I don't think it's necessarily needed. I think it's it seems like fan service to a degree, but obviously a lot of fans really like James Arnold Taylor. It's a tricky one to balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, I'd be happy to see it, but at the same time, I like James Arnold Taylor. He's a good, he's good in the role, so it's difficult to.
I think it would be such a shame, because I don't think Ewan's really that, I don't think he's interested enough in Star Wars to want to back, certainly to television. I'm not sure, but
I mean, television is not
been surprised in the past, right?
Yeah, not the actor's graveyard it used to be, but you know, I think it's still a little bit of a drop down slightly for him, but not by a huge amount, as much as it used to be. But I still think there's a little bit of a drop off in terms of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kyle, hopefully that was comprehensive enough for you, old chap.
Well, if it wasn't, I'd be very worried. But
yeah.
Thank you very much for your questions, Kyle. Always a pleasure.
Even though I cheated.
How so?
Right. Compiling my three into one.
By melding yours, yeah.
We also heard from Corey.
Yes.
Brother of Kyle from Tumbling Saber.
Yes.
He's written, if you have some time, maybe you can kick the can in regards to the following.
Okay.
Do you believe we will ever find out how Kylo comes into possession of Vader's helmet? And do you think we'll ever find out how Luke's saber ended up with Maz? If yes, does either scenario have any pertinent info to add to the saga? Really good question.
That's a great question. Should we address each one individually, yeah?
Yeah. Let's do the Vader's helmet thing first. Yep. So what do you suspect we're going to get out of that?
Of the two, that seems the least necessary. But absolutely, it seems like the easiest one to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know from the Perfect Weapon that there's a person in the market for particularly difficult to obtain merchandise.
Yeah.
And we suspect from conversations we've had before that it's Kylo Ren after the lightsaber of Darth Vader.
Yes, definitely. That I can't see that being anything else now.
Yeah. But
the Perfect Weapon says it all, doesn't it? The title.
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah. But I mean, even just another scene of Rey being captive, which could happen any point in the trilogy, and Ren kind of talking her through his collection of stuff. You know. It reminds me actually of Bloodline.
Yes.
How Castafo's got the Imperial kind of collection of antiquities and stuff that he sees as historical memorabilia, but obviously for Leia it's a really traumatizing thing because it forces her to think back to this horrendous time in her life, which everybody seems to have forgotten about. And you know, we've seen this in real life, how people can downplay history by just it being so long since it happened and that sort of thing. So it's something that rings true for all of us, I think.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Bloodline because I thought when Castafo goes to the dealer for the Royal Guard helmet, I thought that was going to be Vader's helmet.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I was reading it really late one night and I thought, I'm going to have to stop. And when I realised that he was going to get this artifact from this dealer,
yeah,
I thought, right, that's a good place to stop because tomorrow I'm going to realise that when I read this further, I'm going to find out that that's how Vader's helmet came back into play.
Yeah.
And when I did read it, I was ever so slightly disappointed that that wasn't the case. But it does mean that we may not find out where this helmet comes from.
No.
But I did mention previously that I thought maybe it could spark a pilgrimage for Luke and Rey during the events of episode 8.
Yeah.
If she mentions that Kylo had that helmet.
Yeah.
And they go to Endor and see that the funeral pyre has been pillaged.
Yeah.
I don't think that's likely to happen now. So. I think it's too much of a right turn, but it could be part of a Force vision maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe we'll find out that Luke went back and gained that and took that helmet and Kylo stole it from him. But, you know, if we do that, in terms of Corey's question, asking if there's any pertinent information, that might be an element that adds a layer, certainly of conflict between Luke and Kylo.
Yes.
If Luke had taken that as not so much a trophy, but as a keepsake or an heirloom or a remembrance, a reminder perhaps of what his destiny could have been because he went very close to the dark side.
Yes.
And if Kylo stole that from him and took it as something to idolise, that could be...
Oh, yeah, that could be a great source of friction.
An interesting source of friction, yeah. So,
yeah.
But what about the saber?
The saber, I think, is more important.
Absolutely.
To have explained because, obviously, as we've talked about before, it's Anakin's saber. And we think it might be the only one made with a natural crystal that he made himself.
Yes.
So in which case...
And it's that crystal that called to Rey.
Yeah, exactly. So we think it's resonating with significant amounts of power.
Yeah.
So I think it's far more important that we get more detail about how that happens. Especially as I mean, I've speculated in the past that it might be a way of bringing in Lando in a way that makes sense, to having kind of an investigation going on, a subplot behind the scenes about where Maz Kanata got this from. I mean, we only have the kind of episode 7 to go on that she's an entirely inherently good character. She might be more complex than that.
Yeah, she might be. She's been around for centuries, hasn't she?
Exactly.
So there could be a lot going on under the surface there.
Yeah, she could be a Vergia or a Vergia. There's a character in Legends called Vergia, and she's a sort of bird-like creature. Mm-hmm. And she's never really quite clear. It's never really quite clear what her motivations are, because she's playing both sides all the time. And she is working for the Zan Vong during the New Jedi Order series, but she's been around since, you know, long before that. And she's always been kind of flitting between the light and the dark. And she's actually the one who starts Jason Solo on his journey towards becoming Darth Cadus. So she's kind of led him to the dark side.
Right.
And his journey to becoming a Sith Lord. I guess it's a Sith Lord. Yeah. A dark Force user and a significant presence in the galaxy's power struggles. But she's always out for herself. And Maz Kanata could easily become a character like that. She's actually just, it suits her to support Finn and Rey, to support Finn and indirectly Rey during that scene. But she could easily just be she's a neutral, you know. She doesn't really get involved in the struggles unless it suits her.
Yeah, I guess I've committed that cardinal sin now, where I've got an idea in my head and I can't get round it.
Okay,
I'm convinced now, from having worked on a couple of pieces about Rey's origins, that Maz is a member of the Church of the Force.
Oh, and
between them, Lor San Tekka, Luke Skywalker, and Maz Kanata decided that they would split up, take elements with them, and protect them in order to bring about the return of the Jedi, in the event that this vergence in the Force, this child of the Force, Rey, was ever to be found. And I think Lor San Tekka took Luke's map of his pilgrimage, that fragment of the map of his pilgrimage, with him, so that they could hide the location of whatever temples he'd found.
Yeah.
And I don't think Lor San Tekka went directly to Jakku. You know my theory. I think that they've located Rey on Jakku, or they put Rey on Jakku and then set up their Church of the Force, their settlement on Kelvin Ridge or Kelvin Ravine.
Yep.
To watch over her in the same way as Obi-Wan watched over Luke.
Okay.
So he was there protecting the map of Luke's pilgrimage and keeping an eye on Rey. And Maz is in a separate part of the universe, a separate part of the galaxy, completely cut off, completely isolated, out of contact with these other members of the Church of the Force.
But guarding the lightsaber. Yeah.
And I think Luke might have given her the lightsaber and said, when this calls to that person, you'll know. So the lightsaber becomes like a lightning rod.
Yeah.
And that's Maz's way of knowing that that's the right person. If it calls to her, and she sees that Rey is deeply troubled by this thing, she's made a connection with it through the Force, she then knows that that's the child of the Force that they've been looking for.
Yeah.
So then it's up to her to set her on her path, which will eventually lead to Luke. And the element that Luke is protecting is his knowledge of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hiding himself so that he can then pass that on to Rey. So that's who I think Maz is. That's why I think she has the lightsaber. She's its guardian. And she's waiting for it to indicate to her
who's next.
The New Hope is.
Yeah.
And if that's not pertinent information to add to the saga, I don't know what is.
I'm inclined to go with your way, actually, because mine requires a bit more. It's hard. It sounds harsh to say, but I know what I mean. It relies on a lot more depth and complexity of character than I think the broad mainstream audience is going to be willing to look at for a character of that importance in the overall story
that won't get a lot of screen time. If it was if it was a Maz Kanata Star Wars story,
yeah,
then you know that they would develop it out. This has always got to be the factor that we divide any of our theories by, is how does it work on a film when the screen time is divided up so quickly?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, we had, what, 5 minutes of Maz Kanata, if that?
Yeah.
In terms of actual screen time. So I think we're going to get a similar amount in Episode 8, if not. I mean, we'll maybe get a little bit more, but I think we're not going to get much, much more than that. Unless there's a, you know, unless she becomes part of a subplot as kind of accompaniment to somebody, like a, you know, like I say, like Lando. If there's a kind of plot involving tracing the origins of how the lightsaber came to that point, we might see her in a bit more screen time. But I think realistically, if she's not tied to a subplot, she's going to turn up for 5 to 10 minutes of screen time, if that. I don't think she's going to be a major player in this trilogy in that respect.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah. Once again, great question.
Great question. Thank you, Corey. Very, very stimulated. Great conversation. Superb. Yeah. Right. I've got one more thing that I want to kick off, and then we'll go to a quick break. So,
yep.
I was contacted today by a chap on Twitter. His name's Adam Giles.
Yep.
He's at Das Weely Cool, which is a great Twitter handle.
Yeah, I love that
one. Superb, isn't it? And he's asked us to give a quick shout out to a Kickstarter for a UK-based lightsaber supplier. It's modular lightsabers that are customizable.
Yeah.
They're called Eurosabers.
Okay.
So if you've got any interest in that, then head over to Kickstarter and look up Eurosabers, and you'll find out a lot more about them there. I think they're going to do some exciting things, and I'm hoping to do something with them in the future.
Okay.
But yeah, go over there and show them a bit of interest. But
yeah.
Okay, right. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have Connor's Corner and the results of this week's Twitter poll, and possibly a new Twitter poll for next week. So we'll be right back.
Hi there, this is Gloria Garcia, the Jakku defender in Star Wars The Force Awakens, and we're listening to Talk Star Wars Podcast.
Okay, we're back. Thanks for your patience there. We're a quick break. We're going to go straight to Connor's Corner now, because he's got quite an interesting question for us.
Yeah, let's do it. So it's Connor's Corner featuring Leo, because we've been a bit hard on Leo. Not seriously, but, you know, nevertheless.
He deserves it.
Yeah. Sort it out.
I've seen the way he's being treated at the con at the moment, looking at the pictures on Twitter.
Oh, really?
He's on his knees in front of stormtroopers with weapons trained at him, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, well, I mean, that's not as extreme as we'd have gone, but...
No.
Right, so, Con's Corner featuring Leo. Good day, gents. I trust you're all well. I am. I think Mark is.
Yes, thank you.
Hopefully, yeah, Steve.
Indeed.
With the great reviews and attention that the likes of Daredevil, House of Cards, and now Preacher are receiving, and how popular these streaming services have become in the last few years, no longer is it a slight on an actor or actress to be involved in a TV project. Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Television was a place film stars were put out to pasture. TV is now drawing in some big names, and people watch TV in a different way now on the move and when they want. We were just talking about this before recording, how convenient that is. So what I'm asking is, remember a few years back there was a lot of talk of the live-action Star Wars TV show, but was considered to be too expensive to make. At one stage, I think Kevin Smith was involved. Back then, the price was deemed too high production-wise. But now, with Marvel and Disney already dipping their toes into this area with Daredevil and being very successful, could a Star Wars TV show finally happen? It doesn't have to be a Jedi story. It could just be something like Tales of the Outer Rim or Cantina stories, just spitballing. Just think, an episode of Nerf herding on Yavin. It's something that they must be looking at now, surely, and if you guys talk about it, they might just do it. Remember the Rogue One reshoots announced this week? I think they heard your plot theory, which was superb, by the way.
That's the Tidarium thing from last week. Yeah.
Anyway, gents, as always, we all look forward to hearing your thoughts on this. Keep up the great work, and as always, may the frogs be with you. Yeah, funny. Right,
oh dear,
Connor and Leo, sent by Raven. Nice. I think they're Game of Thrones fans as well, then.
Yeah.
Be interested to... I'll chat to you about that in After Dark Side, if you like.
Yeah, okay, then, yeah.
Cool. Right, so the breakdown of this is, will we get a Star Wars TV show? And if so, what would you, I guess we're kind of also saying, what would we like it to be about?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's unavoidable.
I think at this point, yeah.
Yeah. I know Disney are entering in to deal with Netflix.
Yep.
Certainly in the US, they will be getting Star Wars, I think, by the end of the year. So I don't think it's going to be long. I think, you know, we've had the Clone Wars, we've had Rebels. Yep. What we're talking about now is live action, isn't it?
Yes.
And they were going to do Star Wars Underworld, which is a series that Connor was referring to that was too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's like at least 100 scripts for that written, something like that.
Wow.
And there's already a fully produced TV show that's all done. Every episode is complete.
Really?
Yeah, it was. Oh, okay. It was Seth Green was involved with it. And it was a comedy, a live action comedy.
Oh, that does sound familiar.
I'm really forgetting the title of it.
Yeah, I know the one you mean.
It had something, I think it had something to do with the ride. It was very similar to the ride. I can't remember. But yeah, that was done, but it wasn't in keeping with the tone, so it was shelved. So there's all those complete episodes of a TV show out there.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to happen.
Oh, and absolutely, yeah.
In terms of what I would like to see, I was listening to Christian Harloff talk about this on Collider Movie Talk.
Okay.
And he suggested that Boba Fett might be destined for Netflix rather than a big screen.
Okay. Feature. That would make a lot of sense, actually.
Could be interesting.
Yeah, I think so. It's like a dozen episodes of basically following a hitman around.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, it could be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's you know, that I quite like that. But yeah, that definitely would sit well with me. In terms of other stuff.
Not sure about nerf herding on Yavin, though.
Maybe as a reference, but I don't think it would be. I don't want to see an episode of it because it would be a bit of a, you know, Discovery Channel kind of outing,
which I don't think
would fit, would kind of be a bit disjointed. A little.
Maybe
a
that's
touch.
What we need. A Star Wars wildlife show.
Yeah, that would be. I'm Lando Calrissian. I did it in Attenborough's voice. I don't know why. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be good.
Yeah. I would like to see a Lando show with a young Lando. We're getting a Han Solo movie. Why not a Lando TV show?
Yeah, there might be a Lando. There might be a Lando cameo in the Han Solo movie.
Okay.
Possibly
I can believe Michael
B. Jordan.
Oh, okay. Good shout.
Yeah, I could really go for that.
That's a great shout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome. In the answer to your question, Connor, I think it's inevitable. I think it will be soon, and I think it will be good.
Unavoidable. It is their schedule.
Right, last week I thought it might be an interesting exercise to sort of do Twitter polls that last a week and get a few. After Steve's question about prequels. Do you love the prequels, and we got some interesting responses. That's probably why Steve isn't here. He's still licking his wounds.
I think so. I think he's. There's just slightly. There's a few more tears to come.
Yeah,
not quite all gone.
The poll I put out last week ties into what we were just talking about with Kyle's question about season 3 of Rebels.
Okay.
So the Twitter question I put out was, do you think Grand Admiral Thrawn will make an appearance in Season 3 of Star Wars Rebels?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, it started off pretty strong with a yes.
Okay.
But now we're 55% of people involved in the poll are saying maybe. So there's not really a great deal of people committing
clear winners one way or the other. Yeah, let's go with this then. I'm going to say, I'm going to interpret maybe from my point of view, from a certain point of view, as he's going to appear, but he won't be a Grand Admiral.
Right.
So maybe the intro story that I'm talking about, where he's a kind of, you know, a prisoner who then surprises them. So the Emperor takes him in. Could hold water in that case. So he could appear in the show without being an Imperial rank character.
Yeah, it could be a slow boil for season 4.
It could well be.
In and slowly develop it. So that when 4 hits, it's all Thrawn. Maybe it's that story.
Maybe. Know. Yeah. Do you think there's going to be a series 4 then?
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean,
okay. Fair enough.
I really don't know what their plans are.
No. I've just heard rumblings. Now. I've heard rumblings that series 3 is as far as they're going to go.
It would make sense, really, with it leading up to the launch of Rogue One, yeah. where you would kind of expect to see those characters around because it's the rebellion.
Yeah, otherwise you'd be looking at...
Speeder bikes.
Yeah, you still get some speeder bikes. So for the listeners, I've moved to a different part of the room, much further away from the window, and I'm still hearing bloody Endor 5000...
Don't forget, ads wants you to film video of the speeder bike chase at some point.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be as exciting as he thinks.
No, probably not.
I'm going to call it
up After Effects.
Yeah, I've got to learn to use it first.
Yeah. So that's our Twitter poll results this week. So people really unsure about this Thrawn thing. I thought that we'd get a clear answer from those interested, but. Apparently not. So
yeah, it's tricky because that book is that spine that he teased is very generic to a lot of books. So it's difficult to say, oh, that's definitely Thrawn because it could be the Jedi Academy series, it could be anything that came out in hardback through Bantam, really. It's tough.
It could be, couldn't it? Why have we all settled on the Thrawn trilogy?
It makes some sense, but at the same time, like I say, there's Shadows of the Empire. Maybe that got a Bantam print in hardback.
It did get hardback because I had it in hardback.
There you go. See, then in which case, it's very much possible that we're looking at...
And they're talking about it on StarWars.com at the moment, Shadows of the Empire. So it could be that this character he's talking about is Dash Rendar.
Could be Dash Rendar. Oh, that'd be
who
great.
Gives him monkeys? What about his black son?
It could be that would make a lot more because they've reestablished Black Sun as canon. Dash Rendar's canon.
It's not
canon
quite as
well,
target then, is it?
Yeah, I believe Dash Rendar is canon again.
Right.
Because he's in
the Outriders
in episode
New Hope,
4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Black Sun would be a great shout.
Because then you're free then. If you introduce Black Sun, you could do the prince or you could do just the organization.
Yeah.
And you're not with. Thrawn, it's laser focused, isn't it?
Yes,
you've got to get
so.
It absolutely right, otherwise you're going to upset people. But with Black Sun, it's quite nebulous, and you can sort of introduce other characters in there the way they do with like the Inquisitors. You have these random characters you can introduce and get away with it. So maybe that's it. Maybe it's Black Sun.
Maybe that would be great. And that, like you said,
watch this space.
It's a weird one with canon at the moment because they've brought. I think last time I heard they brought Black Sun back into canon, but they hadn't brought. Is it Chizor? It's got a weird pronunciation.
Prince Chizor,
Yeah, they haven't brought him back into canon last time I heard. So,
it's a bit weird, bit of a weird character, isn't it?
They've done, I mean, it's difficult because the whole appeal of his character in Shadows of the Empire is his power play with Vader.
Yeah.
And his desperation to eventually to seduce Leia.
Yeah.
But the Vader power play is the big piece of that story. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense unless you bring him in to toy with Vader at that point before episode 4.
Yeah.
But then he's already got Tarkin as well, so that makes it.
He is present during the events of that conversation between the Emperor and Vader.
Yes, of course he is in the Legends, isn't he? Yeah, he's
on
to
the executor,
side.
Yeah.
He's to the he side is, of the Emperor. Yeah.
Which is great. It's a great insight to have
when
you rewatch that film and read Shadows. And maybe I'm giving Shadows of the Empire too much credit, but I thought that was great to think that there's somebody
brilliant,
just lurking in the back, literally in the shadows.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think
strings.
That was great.
Yeah, and somebody who's manipulating probably the greatest manipulator in the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. It's that's what's good about it. I think is it's it kind of. It toys with the idea that even somebody like the Emperor, who's, like you said, this great manipulator of people, isn't completely infallible. He can still be messed with by somebody who's sufficiently devious. Maybe that's... if that turns out to be it, I'll be really happy with that. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So let's put our money on Black Sun then.
Let's go for Black Sun. We're going to theorise that. That's Talk Star Wars copyright June, if it hasn't already been done.
Yeah,
we're calling it now.
Copyright Rob and Mark, nothing to do with Steve because he's got the night off. you're like this week's Twitter poll question then.
Ooh,
because
okay.
this suddenly came to me during the week. And I was trying to think of a nice question to throw out there for the listeners to get involved with and something that we could sink our teeth into.
Yep.
And I don't think this has actually been addressed yet. And I'd be interested to see if they do tackle it head on
okay.
in episode 8. Will Rey know that Luke is Darth Vader's son?
Oh, that Luke is Darth Vader's son. Oh yeah, I don't know. Because at no point is it... Oh yeah, it's not even made clear to her that Kylo Ren is Darth Vader's grandson, because all she says is you're obsessed with being as powerful as Darth Vader. You're worried you're not as powerful as Darth Vader.
Exactly.
Never says your grandfather.
No.
So he doesn't let that bit slip, I'm guessing.
No. And when she talks about Luke, she first discusses Luke with Finn. She says, I thought he was a legend.
Yeah.
So it's not like Luke really has any tangible place in her understanding of the galaxy.
No, absolutely
but
not.
There's yeah. She can't deny that the Empire are a thing because her home planet is littered with artifacts
yes.
for the Empire.
Yes.
And so you would think that the Emperor and his apprentice were
yep.
quite a significant presence there. She mentions Darth Vader as if she has an understanding of who Darth Vader is.
Yeah,
there's
definitely a sense that she knows of Darth Vader, which is interesting because he's, you know, she doesn't know about Luke Skywalker. She doesn't know for sure about the rebellion and stuff
no.
like that, but she knows of Darth Vader quite vividly. So I'm guessing he's more of a political force than we've been otherwise led to believe.
Yeah.
Either way, much more of a public figure, a publicly known figure.
Yeah, especially when you're out there on the Outer Rim. I'm guessing Jakku's on the Outer Rim. I would have to double check, but
isn't it the Western Reaches?
It's a outpost, isn't it? It's sort of out of central government's control, much like Tatooine was. Sort of being ruled by gangsters and what have you.
Yeah, Star Wars, Jakku was a desert planet located in a remote section of the Western Reaches.
Right. All right, so get involved with our Twitter poll this week then.
Yes.
Does Rey know that Luke Skywalker is Darth Vader's son? And I'd be interested to know from you what her feelings on that subject would be. Because
yeah.
I don't think, considering the events of Bloodline, I don't think she understands that Leia is Vader's daughter.
No, I think you're
or
right.
Or if she does, she's being pretty cavalier with the way she's reacting, because she gives her a big cuddle and seems to trust her.
It's a hard one to say. Would the news have got that far about Leia's parentage? Would it have even left Coruscant?
Yeah.
Oh, Hosnian Prime, sorry. It's on Hosnian Prime, isn't it, by that point?
Anyway, get involved with our Twitter poll. And we'll
yes.
have the results for you next week, and we'll dream up something wild and wacky for the following week.
Sounds good.
Right, we're going to go to another quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to have some Star Wars news.
All right.
Okay, we're back, and you've probably guessed what the main topic of conversation is going to be this week. It's Rogue One, the Star Wars story news. The news that Rogue One, a Star Wars story, is heading for pickups. Everyone's calling it reshoots, but it's pickup shooting.
Okay.
People seem to think this is a bad thing. Rob, what's your position on this subject?
So you'd need to give me a bit of understanding. What are pickups in the context of cinema?
Okay. Pickups are planned sessions of photography.
Okay.
That will take place after principal photography.
Right.
And basically all it is it's a contingency built in by the producers so that when the film is starting to be cut together, if the filmmaker discovers that they are missing information,
yeah.
information that might recontextualize a scene or bridge something or develop something or alter the tone, which is going to be a very important theme,
okay.
They know that they can get all the talent and the crew and equipment and the locations at their disposal to go out after they've put the rough cut, the assembly of the film together. They can go out and pick up additional footage, come back and make the film better.
Okay.
Now, I've just put something on the site about this today.
Yeah, I had a brief skim of it. I had a skim of it before we came on. I didn't have a chance to delve into it in a lot of depth, but it's
that's okay. I'll give you a quick summation.
Pretty interesting.
So this one, as if you're listening to this on Monday, this post went up on Thursday. It is a brief look. I'm just trying to give people a bit of context in about what a reshoot is, and it's not always. You don't just start making a film, do the ABCs of it, and release it. It's always evolving. It's always changing. The Force Awakens did it when Harrison Ford had his injury. They shut down production for a few months, went away, and they rewrote. That's why we got so many deleted scenes for The Force Awakens. And the film we would have got would be very different to the one we got today. And the example I used in my post was Attack of the Clones, where you had a very obvious pickup shot of Obi-Wan and Anakin in a lift. It's obvious because Ewan McGregor's got a fake beard and he's wearing a wig.
Okay.
He did that because he'd come back after the film had wrapped for his contractually obligated pickups.
Mm-hmm.
So additional photography. And what would have happened is Lucas would have cut that film together and realized that the first time we see Anakin and Obi-Wan since A Phantom Menace was when they're in Padme's apartment and the first thing they do is argue.
Yes.
Obi-Wan has to give Anakin a right old telling off when he oversteps his mark, right?
Yeah.
So what Lucas would have said was, no, we need to try and show that these characters are deeply committed to each other. They have a tight relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that scene in the lift where Obi-Wan and Anakin are bantering and we get a little insight into some of the adventures they've had.
Yep.
They're being playful with one another and they're relaxed with each other, so you know that they are close.
Yes.
And then when it turns in the apartment and they have a little argument, you know that there's a darker thread in Anakin that Obi-Wan's trying to train out.
Yep.
But without that context, without knowing that those two have a deep, close relationship.
Yeah.
What we're introduced to is two people that don't really get along. So by the time you get to Revenge of the Sith and you see this relationship turn the way it does, goes rotten from the inside, it's more potent because you know these people really love each other.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to see that when we first saw, or if we'd seen the original cut of Attack of the Clones, we wouldn't have got to see that, which is why they did the pickup and they shot that extra scene. It recontextualizes their relationship. Now, the thing with Rogue One is it's going into reshoots.
Yep.
We're being told it's going into reshoots. Most of that is planned pickups. There was always a plan to go back and do additional photography, because there always is with these big budget things.
Yeah.
But there was something that came out just before we started recording on makingstarwars.net where they're saying that the reshoots are actually a little bit more involved than was originally thought. So this is what came out on makingstarwars.net.
Okay.
It looks like JJ might be supervising some of the reshoots.
Okay.
Along with Gareth Edwards, of course, the Rogue One director, and Christopher McQuarrie, who'd been working on some of the script.
Yep.
So McQuarrie's going to be on set with Edwards to make sure they're on the same page and working from Christopher McQuarrie's most recent draft, which is considered to be superior than the one they shot.
Yeah.
It is in no way Gareth Edwards' fault, because McQuarrie's draft of the script wasn't ready by the time they started shooting.
Yep.
But they've rebuilt 32 sets for the reshoot. They're estimating they're going to reshoot 40% of the film.
What?
And they're going to be working 6 days a week for 8 weeks.
Wow.
To put this together.
Okay.
Now, the idea is that we still don't need to panic about that.
Okay.
The idea is that much like the Obi-Wan and Anakin example I've just given.
Yeah.
And there's in my article on the site, this could be purely an attempt to adjust the tone of the movie.
Okay.
To put a little bit of levity in there and bring it more in line with the tone of A New Hope. That was the early talks, that it was a little bit too dark, a little bit too hard, a little bit too war, too much of a war story. And it needs to dovetail in, because we've learned this week that it goes right up to 10 minutes before the start of A New Hope.
Okay.
So the two need to be very similar in tone.
Yes.
Now, a lot of what I'm reading here on makingstarwars.net is that they're going to be building physical sets to replace the digital ones that they used, because they want to bring the visual aesthetic more in line with A New Hope and The Force Awakens.
Makes sense.
And have less, they're saying it's very prequel-like, this film, with a lot of digital sets and digital set extensions.
Okay. Interesting.
So this 40% reshoot might be, let's get rid of the digital stuff that looks like episodes 1, 2, and 3 and replace it. We're going to invest the money
to replace it with physical sets.
Replace that stuff with physical sets, and let's make this film look right.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Again, it's what the film looks like when you get the first assembly together and you sit down and watch it objectively and say, do you know what? This is missing. We're missing something.
Yeah.
The character's missing.
Mm-hmm.
George didn't have the benefit of that objective point of view when he made
the prequels.
Because no one would tell him. No one would say, George, this isn't working.
Yeah, I understand.
He was in complete and utter control, right? We've said that before.
Yes.
So this, to me, it sounds very much like the point I was trying to make with my Obi-Wan and Anakin thing, that it's a shift. It's contextualizing the story tonally.
Yep.
But what I really like is that they're moving away from the CGI-heavy prequel look towards a more Force Awakens physical look. They might do a reshoot and reshoot everything with the same beats and the same performances as before.
But
it's just going to look better.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be less dependent on CGI.
Yeah. It may be that they did some of the kind of preliminary CG work before The Force Awakens released, right? So they could have not known quite how popular Force Awakens was going to be and how much praise was going to be lavished on the real sets and real models and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
And I would think from this, it's probably going to be about the sets.
Okay.
32 sets have been recreated for the reshoot.
Yep.
That suggests to me that it's about you know, the richness of those locations that we've seen on that tropical planet we discussed last week when we were talking about the Tidarium theory.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be building things to complement that look. You know, they went halfway around the world to get this fantastic vista. And then what they're going to do, they're going to put a flat CG background behind somebody when there's just two people in a room talking.
Yeah,
they're going to rebuild. They're going to be throne rooms. They're going to build Senate rooms. They're going to build all sorts of wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
It's all going to be to our benefit. It doesn't mean the film's in trouble. It doesn't mean that it's not working narratively.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't mean it's not working tonally. It just means that they want to put something physical, something tangible, something appreciable behind that tone.
Uh-huh.
So that we're not looking at it going, hang on, the last time I saw this was in episode 2 and that looked like a poo.
Right, yeah. It's definitely my least favourite of the prequels. We've been through that.
Yeah.
And I've made my peace with that at length.
Yeah, it looked really wonky with the amount it depended on CGI. And this says to me now that that's what they're trying to avoid.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And I think it's reasonable on their part to do so as well. Because I think you're absolutely right that it's a sore point CG stuff. But obviously, they weren't necessarily to know, like I say, how much praise would be lavished upon the real sets and the real models of Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Although you could sort of understand predicting it.
Well, that's it for Rogue One, a Star Wars story news this week. Just that one big story that we couldn't not discuss. So there's a couple of little bits. I think we might jump over this Luke meditates on a rock thing, just because we're coming up to the 90-minute mark. So we'll jump straight over to your John Boyega thing. Do you want to walk us through this, Rob?
Yeah, so this is a tweet that that popped up on my Twitter today. Now I'm saying it, I'm going to have to double-check to make sure it's not an old tweet that's been retweeted, because this is something that just occurred to me as a worry.
Right.
But before I do that, because this may end up being a non-story depending on how long ago it was done. So the tweet I saw was from John Boyega, obviously the wonderful Finn from episode 7. Ah, crap. Yeah, sure enough. It was
an older one, is it?
Yeah, it's an older one, February 15th. So this would actually be when they were in Dubrovnik. So I think it's very likely that I'm actually right with my original question. But to give the listeners a bit of background, I saw this tweet and I didn't notice the date on it. So I went, oh, hang on. I thought first day of shooting today, wasn't he on Dubrovnik doing the Space Horse thing? Yeah. And it turns out, yes, he absolutely was. And it says February 15th, and I didn't read it because I'm a Muppet.
Well, not to worry, mate.
Yeah.
Not to worry. Okay, well, let's just get, let's just move quickly and awkwardly on to Lawrence Kasdan and what he'd said about his involvement in Star Wars.
Okay, cool.
He did, I don't know if you saw any of this, but he was at a film festival.
Right.
I forget where it was now. I think it might have been Austin. I think it was a Jewish film festival.
Oh, right, okay.
And he was asked about his involvement with the Han Solo movie.
Yep.
Obviously, he's writing that with his son. I think it's John Kasdan, his son.
Okay.
They're writing that movie together, and he confirmed a couple of things for us that, yes, indeed, he is working on the Han Solo movie.
Yep. We suspected that anyway.
Absolutely. And directors Lord and Miller are about to relocate to London
okay.
to prep for shooting, which is going to commence in January.
Okay, nice.
In the new year over here. So that's going to be really interesting. But what really did make my day was that he also confirmed, Lawrence Kasdan confirmed, that he has some involvement as a consultant.
Oh, superb.
On episodes 8 and 9.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So he clearly has a hand in the future of Star Wars in
yes.
quite a significant way.
That makes me happy because he's awesome. So we're in good hands.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, all the best parts of Star Wars have been brought to us by Mr. Kasdan.
It certainly helps a lot.
And Raiders, needs to be said.
Yes, also true.
Yeah, he's very fond of the time that he's gotten to spend with Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
he speaks very favourably about them.
He's done very well out of it in terms of, I'm sure he's done very well out of it financially because obviously it's made a lot of money, the series he's worked on. But also I think he's done well out of it critically and probably enjoyment-wise as well. I get the feeling he's probably been quite happy with how things have turned out in terms of how much fun it's let him have.
Oh, he definitely had a whale of a time on The Force Awakens. And he was also saying, I think last week at some point, he was saying he wasn't initially going to be involved with The Force Awakens.
Oh, really?
It was going to be Han Solo. And then Michael Arndt, who was the original writer, or one of the original writers on The Force Awakens, couldn't make the deadlines.
Oh.
He found the tight deadline to be quite
restrictive.
Disruptive.
Yeah.
And it was affecting his ability to deliver creatively. So they split amicably,
mm-hmm.
and Lawrence got caught up with JJ and actually really enjoyed the process of creating with JJ and bringing us what turns out to be one of the strongest entries in Star Wars canon, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
And now is supposedly seeing out his Star Wars career on Han Solo, but I'm really thrilled to know that he's going to be there to consult over 8 and 9, which is what I understood George's role to be in this new Star Wars, in this new era of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Lawrence is our tie to the OT, so it would seem.
Yes, I think that's probably reasonable to say. And I think that's probably, as ties to the OT go, that's a good one to have.
Pretty bloody good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Yes.
Okay, should we wrap this up?
Go for it.
Okay, then. Well, thanks very much for listening to this episode 26 of the Talk Star Wars podcast. If you'd like to support what we do here, as you would have heard me say at the top of the show, head over to talkstarwars.co.uk/support, where you can become a TSW sponsor by giving as little as £1 per month securely via PayPal. So you can help us keep the lights on for less than the price of a small Coke every month.
Yes.
You will also qualify, as you would have heard us say earlier, to become a VIP member and get an exclusive stream of updates from us that isn't available to everybody else.
Yep.
Failing that, you can support what we do just simply by liking and following us on our varied social networks and sharing what we do and just stimulating this conversation. So with that in mind, Robert,
yes.
where can people find you between shows, old chap?
So the most The place where I'm the most kind of verbose is Twitter, where I'm at Rob Wade Vision. But I also run a blog with a couple of friends called Emotionally 14. So it's emotionally14.com. It has an associated YouTube account, Facebook, Twitter. There's podcasts. That's the other one. So iTunes has a couple of podcasts. One is called The Crazy Train, which is a sort of loose form. We talk about nothing in particular, a bit like After Dark Side. But it's a bigger group and they're very funny chaps. There's a new episode. By the time this goes out, it will have been out for a couple of days. And I'm really, really pleased with it. It's one of the best ones we've done in quite a while. And I really do think the kind of the new approach that we're taking, which is just getting together when we can, which has always been the approach, but it's that we're much more trying to relax about it much, much more. Is working. I think it's resulting in higher quality output. We also have a game cast, which is just us talking about video games, whether it's just what we're playing or we have specific questions in mind. The last episode at the time of publication for this, the last episode would have been about what makes us love a game. So what makes it great for us? You know, what kind of elements do we really get excited about? So, you know, is it the story that's most important for us or characters in general? Action, pace, controls, all those sort of things. We talk about we run the absolute gamut of all the different elements that make up a game and what we value most. And it made for a really good discussion. There's an upcoming episode about the kind of games we like that sort of to just kick around and waste time with and kill an hour or something like that. That's my stuff. And then we got Steve.
Yeah, you can find Steve on YouTube. His channel is Calistine. But you'll find a link in the show notes, which will take you to our contacts page. So you can find he is only one click away.
There you go.
He's no news on whether or not he's getting his world record for his largest insect hotel yet. But I'm sure he'll update us on that next week.
I'm excited about that. I really want that to be the case. Because if we can be the record breaking cast of Talk Star Wars, we'd never have to specify what record we broke.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'll just plaster that and be on the artwork. Exactly. Record breakers.
Contains a world record holder for most drilling.
And it's not me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk and you can play with me on Twitter by following me at TalkStarWars.
Oh my.
And don't forget to like don't start with the Han Solo stuff. You can find our Facebook page also at facebook.com/TalkStarWars, right. And we are just about everywhere else.
Cool.
Okay. Don't forget to leave us a nice review on iTunes if you haven't done so already. Thanks again, and we will see you guys next week.
May the Force be with you.
It's a wrap. It's a wrap.